Surviving the climate crisis might mean leaning into relationships. That's according to the author of a new book on climate resilience. Kylie Flanagan defines climate resilience like this.
The community's capacity to keep all of its members safe through both extreme events like hurricanes and wildfires, as well as the slowly simmering everyday stressors.
I spoke with Flanagan about her book, Climate Resilience, how we keep each other safe, care for our communities, and fight back against climate change. You write in the beginning of the book that it's intentionally not focused on technology, but instead on other tools of climate mitigation and adaptation. Why did you make that decision, and what is the book about?
You know, I want to preface this by saying that technology is absolutely, you know, has a critical role to play in the climate movement. But for too long, there's been a hyper focus on technology. And I think that, you know, it's driven in part because decision makers and many folks in positions of power have a lot invested in maintaining the status quo. And so they've also been invested in committed to this narrative that if we just swap out one set of technology for another set of technology, we'll essentially be able to continue business as usual. With this approach, we've made incredible leaps and bounds in renewable technology innovation, but we have not yet made meaningful strides in radically reducing global greenhouse gas emissions. Renewable energy technology across the board is getting cheaper and more efficient, and there's tremendous demand for it. But as long as the fossil fuel industry remains as powerful as it is and can influence the policy that can and can't get passed, they're still able to essentially lock the world into decades more of burning fossil fuels. So it can't just be about technology.
You also chose not to interview cisgender men for this project, and the 39 essays center other voices in the climate movement. Why?
Part of the impetus for this project was really just to try and bring a bit more balance into the climate conversation. When I started this book about 3 years ago, and admittedly, the landscape has changed a bit since then, but I felt like so many of the mainstream climate conversations were being dominated by men. And that felt so different than my own experience in climate and environmental justice spaces, which for me had overwhelmingly been dominated by women, non-binary and gender expansive folks. And more so than that, a lot of the men, you know, that were getting the most attention in climate conversations were and still are ultra wealthy businessmen who had led venture capital companies and technology companies. And I really respect the intention to help advance the climate movement, but I am a firm believer that we're not going to solve these complex problems with the same tools and mindsets that got us into them in the first place. And so I was very intentional about trying to bring more folks into the conversation who have been most impacted by the climate crisis, along with intertwined environmental and social crises, and whose communities have effectively been navigating crises like that and building resilience for generations. And so it felt really important to specifically focus on Black, Indigenous, and people of color, as well as perspectives of queer, trans, and disabled folks.
Can you talk briefly about a couple of the people you spoke with and why they're inspiring to you?
It's hard to choose because I'm so inspired by everyone who, you know, who's featured in this book. But I think, you know, a couple of people who come to mind would be Kylea Frederick. She is constantly dancing between roles in different types of spaces, whether that's curating and publishing writing and art on topics like Indigenous sovereignty, spiritual ecology, and climate justice, or fighting for climate policy at the local level. Desiree Fontenot is another person who comes to mind who really embodies what it means to build power across different movements and to do everything with just tremendous thoughtfulness and intentionality. Right now, Desiree is involved in a couple of different land rematriation projects that are simultaneously advancing ecological stewardship, Black land reparations, Indigenous sovereignty, queer and trans liberation, and disability justice.
Did you say rematriation? Can you say a little bit about what that is?
Yes, absolutely. So there, I think, are a few different ways to talk about it. I think in this instance, we're talking about returning land to Indigenous peoples and in right relationship with the earth.
One of the themes in the book is the idea that we don't have to choose between individual changes and systemic action on climate. Why did you want to take on that dichotomy?
The climate conversation in general could benefit from a little more nuance and complexity because it's a really complex topic. And I think when we get stuck in this sort of individual versus structural change binary, it can be really disempowering. We can sometimes feel like, okay, there's not that much I can do alone. You know, it's not enough for me to swap out my light bulbs or recycle. But also, I have no idea where to begin when it comes to taking on these massive systems. So what I really wanted to emphasize is that we don't have to choose, and that when we work together and when we band together with other community members, and I use that term really expansively, it might mean like folks who you live nearby. It might mean folks that you participate in recreation with, or, you know, have a shared identity or affinity with. When we work together with other folks, there is so much that can be done. There are actually a few examples that I really love in communities across Pennsylvania that I feel like really demonstrate this. I don't know if you are a Rights of Nature law fan, but I've been so inspired by communities like Grant Township, which has a population of 693 people, but using Rights of Nature law to take on the massive and immensely powerful fracking industry, they were able to get the permit for an injection well in their community revoked, which I feel like is just such an incredible example of how much can be done when folks rally together and work in community.
Yeah, each section of the book ends with possible action items that readers might take. What are some that resonate with you?
I'm thinking a lot about just how to begin eroding the power of the fossil fuel industry. And so I'm looking to divestment campaigns, to folks who are participating in direct action, who are taking to the streets and speaking about these issues and kind of halls of corridors of power. But I think also there are so many strategies in this book that don't necessarily look like climate strategies. And so those are really heartening as well. Yeah, I hope that there's kind of something for everyone in there.
One of them that I hadn't really thought about as a climate strategy was seed saving to grow your own food.
Mm-hmm. I had my mom read the book a couple of weeks past, and she called me when she got to that section. She was like, oh my goodness, your great-grandmother was a seed saver. I didn't realize that this, you know, really cool piece of ancestral wisdom was something that we can and should be doing today, and that we have this beautiful familial relationship with. So yeah, that was a really neat one to learn more about as well.
What are some of the questions that you want readers to ask themselves after reading the essays?
So there are sort of different reflection prompts scattered throughout the text, but I have some at the back of the book as well. And I think probably a main one that I'd love for folks to take away is just, who is already doing the work that, you know, I'm interested in? What kinds of support are they calling for? What sorts of talents and resources can I bring to the table? I think that's a really lovely starting point for so many people. Some of this work is also about pulling more people into the movement. So it's always great to ask, who are my people? Which communities am I a part of? And how can I organize with them? And then beyond this organizing piece, I'd also encourage folks to consider how they can regularly practice the world that they want to live in, which is, you know, always evolving. But I think, you know, we're not going to wake up tomorrow in a more just, equitable, abundant, climate-stable world. So what might it look like to start building that world itty-bitty piece by piece at home and in day-to-day life?
Thank you. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much. It was so lovely to chat with you today.
Kylie Flanagan is the author of Climate Resilience: How We Keep Each Other Safe, Care for Our Communities, and Fight Back Against Climate Change. There's more of our climate change reporting at AlleghenyFront.org. You're listening to The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.